Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, January 11th. Before we look too closely at the possibility of impeaching Donald Trump for a second time, before we go forward, we should really keep looking back because details are still emerging about just how bad the Capitol riot was. Now, if you've been watching TV news this weekend, maybe you saw the video on CNN of a guy in the crowd on the Capitol steps beating a DC police officer with what? An American flag, while rioters around him sang what? The national anthem. Maybe you saw where at one point rioters tore down an American flag outside the Capitol and replaced it with a Trump flag. Yes, there is a Trump flag, in case you didn't know. Maybe you saw the photo of the guy inside the Capitol waving a really big Confederate flag. So much about flags. These people love flags. Oh, and they love shirts, I guess. Maybe you saw the image of the rioter wearing a Camp Auschwitz shirt with the slogan, "Work brings freedom," the words that Jews being brought to that concentration camp would see as they arrived. BuzzFeed reports on black Capitol Police officers being subjected to multiple incidents of being called the N-word multiple times, and one black Capitol Police officer who describes having to try to fend off rioters with hand-to-hand combat as some of them hurled Blue Lives Matter flags at them. Historian Jill Lepore, writing in The New Yorker this weekend, says maybe a better term to describe it all than storming the Capitol would be race riot. Maybe you saw the video of a lone Capitol Police officer who happened to be black, now being described as a hero, letting rioters inside the Capitol chase him as he chose his path strategically to draw them away from where members of the Senate were and toward a different room where he had backups waiting. The Washington Post today reports on a moment inside the Capitol as the breach was taking place. It says three senior GOP aides piled furniture against the door and tried to move stealthily, worried that the intruders would discover them inside. In waves, the door to the hall heaved as rioters punched and kicked it. The crowd yelled, "Stop the steal!" Some chanted menacingly, referring to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" That from the Washington Post. We'll speak to a Post congressional reporter in a minute. The 100-plus members of Congress around the country who nevertheless voted for overturning the election after the rioters were cleared are facing backlash in their districts. For example, in New York City, Republican Nicole Malliotakis, who has been getting mocked on Twitter since Saturday, since she tweeted, despite supporting the lie that helped lead to the riot, this.
"Hi, it's Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis, and today is National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. I want to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the New York Police Department for all that they do to keep our community and our city safe."
Yes, Saturday was National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. Nothing there about Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who got murdered in the melee. Not to say the members of Congress who voted to overturn supported the rioting per se, but a reckoning is only beginning to take place over how much responsibility goes to those members who humored Trump and helped fire up the base with rhetoric supporting the stolen election falsehood that they knew was false. And now comes the question, what to do next about Trump and about national security between now and Inauguration Day next Wednesday? Many Democrats and a few Republicans think if Trump doesn't leave or is forced out by his cabinet, they should impeach him again. Here's former New Jersey governor and former Trump transition chief Chris Christie yesterday on ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos saying, yes, the president's role is an impeachable offense.
What we had was an incitement to riot at the United States Capitol. We had people killed. And to me, there's not a whole lot of question here. So, you know.
So you think it was an impeachable offense?
I said before, Jordan. Oh, sure. Yeah.
And you'd vote to impeach.
I think that, you know, if I think it's an impeachable offense, that's exactly what I would do, George. But I'm not in there. But you want my opinion. That's my opinion. I think if inciting to insurrection isn't, then I don't really know what is.
Chris Christie. With me now, Washington Post correspondent Mike DeBonis, who covers the House of Representatives. His latest article is about the split among Democrats on how hard to push for impeachment. Mike, thanks for coming on with us. As so much is changing around you there in D.C., welcome to WNYC.
Yep, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And before we get to your reporting about what happens next, let's talk a little about what happened Wednesday. Are you learning more along with the general public? And I assume you heard those various bullet points from my intro there about just how ugly and just how violent the whole thing was?
First off, let me say I was not there on Wednesday. I was scheduled to work the overnight shift covering the joint session, so I was going to come in later in the day, so I was not present. But many of my colleagues were. I've spoken to many of them. I've obviously seen their accounts, seen many of the videos, the photographs, the documentation. And as harrowing as this was in real time, watching this from afar, I think getting the full picture that's been assembled, not only through these accounts, but by my colleagues at The Washington Post and at other news organizations who have really tried to do these reconstructions, I think we're really getting a very vivid sense of how dangerous the situation was, how we don't, not only do we not know the extent of the motivations of the rioters, but we, people came in with very serious weapons and devices and paraphernalia that indicates some very bad motives that if it weren't for some quick action by certain people inside the building could have led to a hostage situation, certainly further violence or death. And I think that is weighing on everyone who works in the Capitol, from lawmakers on down to custodial staff, of just how explosive the situation was.
Yeah. And often it's custodial staff and other people who don't ever get the glory, people who are not members of Congress and therefore were not equipped with gas masks as part of their standard issue equipment, were arguably the most at risk. So we should acknowledge their work and their risk. So to go one step deeper into what you just said, with 5 days of hindsight, can you say if this crowd had leaders and what they were actually planning to do if they could? Was it not just, say, ransack Nancy Pelosi's office, but kidnap her? Like those alleged Michigan militia terrorists were out to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer or even kill her, or what?
I don't know that we have a great answer to that question just yet. We know that people inside the building were running around chanting, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" We know that there were people inside the building coming into the building on video chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." We don't know to what degree this was organized, to what degree folks came on Wednesday with a particular plan in mind. That's going to be a big focus. We know the law enforcement investigation, the people who have already been charged and who are going to be charged further are certainly going to be investigated as to their motives and whether they plan specific acts of violence or simply wish to, that it was a riot and sort of the classical sense of, people just rush in and want to wreak havoc. And I think that may be true for the vast majority of people who went in, but we certainly can't rule out at this point that there were individuals or groups of individuals in there who had much more nefarious and violent motives.
And is this your understanding of why Twitter banned the president and other platforms are cracking down on insurrectionist speech now in various ways? Is it your understanding that it's precisely for this reason, to make it harder for people to incite another riot before or during Inauguration Day?
I don't cover the tech companies super closely. I can tell you that, you know, certainly the statement Twitter made when they banned, they suspended President Trump permanently, pointed to their fear that he was seeking to incite more violence. I mean, the timing of all this is not coincidental, right? I mean, they took this, you know, their most aggressive action to date after a violent insurrection had already broken out. And I think that it had finally become perfectly clear to everyone, at whether it's at Facebook, Twitter, anywhere else, that, you know, allowing this sort of speech has very real world consequences. And, you know, whether there's a particular, you know, thing or a particular conversation that happened inside of some of these companies, I think it's pretty manifest that after what happened Wednesday, people are taking a second look at what's going to be permissible on these platforms.
Mike, I see you tweeted out an article by some of your Washington Post colleagues about how the Capitol Police Chief, Stephen Sund, was concerned about how physically threatening it could get at least 2 days before Wednesday's insurrection attempt, but he couldn't get permission to ask the D.C. National Guard to be on standby. Can you describe briefly what your Post colleagues have learned?
Sure. My colleague Carol Lenig was the first to interview the now resigned chief of the Capitol Police, Stephen Sund. He basically laid the blame at the feet of his bosses, the two sergeant at arms of the House and the Senate. He reports to them, and he basically laid out an account where he, before the days before the riot, said, "I'm concerned about the security situation here. Can we do more with the National Guard? Can we, really explore a full deployment?" And the message he got back was, "We're not so sure that's a good idea." That's expected to hear a lot more about those conversations in the weeks and months to come. There is no doubt whatsoever that this is going to be the subject of very intense congressional scrutiny, whether it's by, a potential joint committee. There's talk of a 9/11 style commission being set up, but there's going to be very intense investigation of the exact happenings that led up to last Wednesday. And I expect that Mr. Sund would be testifying. I expect the two now resigned sergeants at arms to be testifying. There's going to be a lot of questions that are going to be asked, a lot of accountability to be had.
And we should point out that now it is that Capitol Police Chief, Stephen Sund, who got hamstrung in the efforts to be prepared, as the Washington Post is reporting and our guest Mike DeBonis from the Post was just describing. It's Stephen Sund who seems to be resigning under pressure. So are there calls for some of these others to be next, or to see Sun now as a fall guy rather than a failure?
Well, the two bosses I referred to, Michael Stanger, the Senate Sergeant at Arms, and Paul Irving, the House Sergeant at Arms, have both resigned themselves. Oh. So there was pretty quickly a cashiering of the top Capitol security ranks. I think that whether it ends there or not, I think remains to be seen. I think that there is a concern that we are now, 9 days away from an inauguration, which is typically the most high profile security event on Capitol Hill every 4 years. And I think that there is some wariness of creating any further disruption in the security management ranks at this time. But I don't think we can rule out further action going forward.
Clyburn said on TV yesterday that they might impeach him in the House, but not send it to the Senate right away, as you were indicating before. Maybe not until Biden's first 100 days, not only so he can get his cabinet nominees confirmed, but also so as not to distract from the policy agenda for the first 100 days, like on racial justice or on COVID. So that's an interesting scenario, kind of tying it to the first 100 days or putting a pause on it for 100 days to try to stop the media as well as other, you know, political actors from continuing to talk about Trump when they want to really be talking about what to do with policy after Trump. Remind everybody, what's the point of impeaching a president after he leaves office? There is a practical element to this. It's not just symbolic denunciation, right?
That's right. I mean, the most important practical effect is that the draft impeachment resolution that we're expecting to be introduced today would bar Trump from holding the office ever again. And that is absolutely the main practical effect. There's also a question of whether he might be barred from receiving the benefits that ex-presidents are entitled to. That actually is a more complicated question that would probably be subject to some litigation, but it's also part of, part in the mix here is part of the practical effects. I think that Democrats, though, are also looking at the sort of more symbolic importance of proceeding with a trial and a vote. Certainly the Democrats who were present on Wednesday believe that, you know, this was an occurrence so grave, so unprecedented in American history that it needs to be there need to be consequences of the highest order, whether or not it actually removes Trump from office early, that you need to go through the whole process. And more important than that, to some of them anyway, I think including the Speaker of the House, is the need to put Republicans, members of Trump's own party, on the record as to what they consider to be acceptable and unacceptable behavior. And I think that there's going to be certainly several votes in, this week in the House that are going to do that in the House. And I think that there's a big hope that Republican senators as well are going to have to take a vote and explain where they think accountability lies for what happened on Wednesday.
I saw one tweet from a journalist this morning, and I don't know if you can confirm this, that said a censure resolution would have the same effect as impeachment and conviction in terms of barring Trump from running for the presidency again. Do you know if that's true?
I do not know if that's true. It's possible. I'm afraid that I just don't have a definitive answer on that. And that's a good target for me to figure out today.
Sarah in Ewing, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me. I wanted to pivot away just a little bit from the inauguration, or I'm sorry, the impeachment, and talk about security measures. Mm-hmm. On Monday afternoon, Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys, was arrested in D.C. on the charge of burning that BLM flag in front of the church, but also because he was carrying a bunch of illegal ammunition. Again, that's the Washington Post. And I'm wondering about the security timeline with that information and kind of the process unfolding of really inadequate defense of the Congress building, considering that this person was in D.C., is a leader of this terrorist organization, this white supremacist organization, and then not being prepared for that to be larger than just this one person or just this one item. I just don't understand the disconnect between that arrest and the lack of security seen on the steps of the Capitol. Can you all speak to some of that?
That's a great question. And Mike DeBonis from The Washington Post, do you have anything
on
that?
I can speak to that. I think that I think it's consistent in this respect. I think that the security posture that the Metropolitan Police, the Capitol Police, the other law enforcement and military officials who were planning for this, it was all based on the expectation that this would be like what they had seen before from these pro-Trump crowds, which is sort of small marauding bands of Proud Boys or just mischief makers who would, you know, harass people in the streets. There would be some sort of street violence, beatings, sort of, you know, scattered about the city. What they were not planning for was a gathering at the Capitol that would coalesce into a, you know, what we saw, which was an attempt to storm the citadel of democracy. This was not the situation they were planning for. They were sort of seeing things through the lens of what they had seen last year. And that's what they were expecting to happen again. And so having the leader of the Proud Boys arrested is consistent with, you know, that sort of posture, which is, you know, we're going to take care of the guy whose band of thugs has been roaming around our city beating people up, but we're not going to necessarily beef up security of the Capitol expecting a charge of thousands of Trump supporters at the gates and up the steps of the Capitol itself.
And were they not anticipating Trump's own role in a certain respect? Were they not anticipating moments like this when he addressed the crowd midday Wednesday?
We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Or like this.
We're going to walk down and I'll be there with you.
And of course, he wasn't going to be there with them. He was going to be whisked away to safety while they put their bodies on the line, even as rioters, you know, who should be arrested and charged with crimes, they were putting their bodies on the line and he was whisked away to wherever he was whisked away to. Was the president's role itself that people are now talking about the possible basis for charges of incitement to riot, something that security forces did not reckon with?
Well, it's clear that was the case. I mean, we're going to hear from all of these key officials at some point. They're going to have to testify in public and go through their thought processes. But it seems obvious that they were not expecting the president himself to appear at this rally and basically say, march down to the Capitol. And in so many words, encourage them to do what they did. And I think, you know, right now it seems obvious that that's what was going to happen. And I think that they have a lot of explaining to do as to why it wasn't as obvious before it happened.
How much of the debate in Congress with Republicans opposing impeachment is centered around those words that we just played of the president and saying, march to the Capitol doesn't mean break into the Capitol. He never told them to do that or seemed to indicate to them that he wanted them to do that or supported them doing that.
There is some of that. I expect as we get closer to actually passing impeachment articles later this week that we're going to hear more of that. But the interesting thing is that Republicans seem to be sort of appealing to this sense of national unity in trying to prevent Democrats from moving forward. They say it would be too divisive. There are actually a lot of them are appealing directly to Joe Biden, saying that it would be a betrayal of his promise to unite America if you were to allow this to happen. To which, of course, Democrats just become enraged because, you know, this is a party that's engaged in terribly divisive rhetoric and stood by as President Trump, not only incited the riot on Wednesday, but engaged in just the most extremely divisive and partisan rhetoric for 4 to 5 years before that. So those arguments aren't going to be carry much water with Democrats who are going to be voting this week. Whether they start to make a more legalistic and technical argument about what the president did or didn't do, I think remains to be seen.
Mike DeBonis, congressional reporter, covering primarily the House of Representatives. You're going to have a little bit of a busy week, Mike. Not that every week isn't, but...
Unlike the last 4 to 5 weeks, yes, a busy week coming up, yes.
Or 4 to 5 years. Thank you so much for coming on with us. You gave us a lot of time in the midst of all this. We appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.